The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Welcome back to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. You can find us on Twitter at Bastards_Boston. I am your host, Charlie Smith, coming to you from Los Angeles, California. You can find me on Twitter at Smith_MLB. Our other hosts for this episode are Terry Cushman, coming to us from Myrtle Beach in South Carolina by way of Windham, Maine, and Chris Felico, coming to us from Warwick, New York, covering for Cody Paulson, who is dealing with torrential downpours, the weather that was in the Bible during Noah's Ark. It's absolutely insane in Houston. So we pray for him and everybody in the Houston area that's going through a little bit of a crapshoot with weather. Red Sox dropped 2 out of 3 against St. Louis, salvaging the series by scoring 11 in the third game. Overall, are outscored 20-19, so a little bit fluffed because of game 3. How are both of you doing? Chris, finally we get to work together. How are you?
I'm doing better than Cody, apparently. I thought I was having a rough weekend watching the Sox, but I feel a little bit better. Feel good being on the show. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Welcome. And Terry, how are you doing today?
I am doing excellent. I won both of my tournaments this weekend. If you can just win one or two in a calendar year, that's a successful year. To walk out of the tournament with both the trophies, that was amazing. And I even won the doubles tournament on Saturday, me and my teammate on that. I just couldn't miss, but I'm doing well. You can find me at Cushman MLB. Charlie covered the podcast account. You can find us on Instagram. You can find us on, I have a Facebook. If you're a Facebook only person, you hate Twitter, Terry Talks Sox. And we have a newly overhauled YouTube channel with plenty of content, often multiple streams a day. Check us out there as well.
Absolutely. And Chris, before we begin and get into the swing of things, where can fans find you on Twitter?
CFelico718.
And that's C, how do you spell it?
C-F-E-L-I-C-O 718.
There we go. Done. For those that are curious, we're already following each other. Sorry, now spell it. But for those that were curious, let's get right into it. So Terry, why don't you lead us off? Always fun. We got the Kyle Schwarber leadoff team here. So you're going first.
Yeah, you know, I have lost 20 pounds in the last month, though, so I'm not...
Still got the beard, though. You got the beard.
Oh, yeah.
I would be
naked without the beard. I've had it my whole 30s, and I'll probably have it for the rest of my life. But, you know, it's tough assigning a dud for the series because for a couple of games, you were just offensively anemic and then stranding base runners and scoring position as well. I'm going to give it to Rafaela. I mean, he had a good last couple of weeks. Wasn't really looking like he was going to be an automatic out. Seemed like he was on the up and up. His average was above the Mendoza line. That has slipped down to 192, I think. He was 0 for 7 on the series. Couple of strikeouts. And, I mean, once you get past the fifth spot in the order, I mean, you've got nothing. Like, where is it coming from? And I love the fact that Rafaela is hitting in the nine hole, because when he's on, you're gaining a second leadoff guy. But he just didn't give you a whole lot. He did make a pretty good defensive play, which saved a couple of runs. I can't remember if that was in game one or two, but other than that, I mean, it just, I picked us to sweep this series. I thought the matchups looked pretty good. They're pitching. I mean, Miles Michaelis, you know, gets his rear end handed to him on every fifth day, basically, it seems like. So that's a guy that a bad offense should be able to put runs up against. And we just totally no-showed that game offensively. And you got to get that part of the order hitting, or we are going to fall. We're going to be hanging out with the Titanic here pretty soon.
Yeah. Chris, anything you want to add?
No, I think that's it's a solid pick for a dud. I mean, he went 0 for 7, had two strikeouts, had a ground out, a soft ground out to be able to pop out with runners in scoring position. So, yeah, it's a good one, Terry. As far as for my dud, I had Grissom. Went 1 for 11 in the series, had an error in game one, could have had one in game two when he ran into Rafaela at shortstop, but they did not give it to him. He had four strikeouts, two of which with runners in scoring position. He had a double play with a runner in scoring position and two weak groundouts with runners in scoring position. So there's a trend. A lot of outs on weak contact when there's a chance to get people across the plate, which the Sox have struggled to do all season long, but specifically in this series, and put us behind the eight ball. And I'm frankly just sick of hearing and every single feed about how Vaughn Grissom has lost 14 pounds. I get it. By now, he should have gained some weight. And if not, like, what are we doing about it? Because, you know, we gave up Chris Sale, and I know that Chris Sale's polarizing at this point, right? Like, there's mixed emotions on his tenure here with the Red Sox. But the reality is right now he is producing for the Braves, and Vaughn Grissom is not producing for the Red Sox. That's what I got.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to weigh in for 2 seconds on Vaughn Grissom. The concern is pretty severe. Throughout the year, we've had only one game with an extra base hit and one game with runs knocked in, and it coincidentally happened to be the same game. Since then, he's only had singles if he gets them. He's striking out once a game, which is pretty much the standard for him. But I'm not seeing anything that says, wow, this is totally a steal of a trade or even worthy of a trade for Chris Sale, who's pitching out of his mind. And this is like Rafaela or like any other guy that we have on our team. And the expectation for Vaughn Grissom was pretty high. You're giving an elite pitcher to the Atlanta Braves, and they've been able to figure it out, whatever they're doing with Chris Sale. Granted, it is only, you know, mid-May, so there's plenty of time for things to kind of get derailed. Vaughn Grissom has severely underperformed and underwhelmed. I don't look at Vaughn Grissom in the lineup and say, oh my God, yes, thank God he's there, because there's nothing happening. It's just, it's a ground out. It's a strikeout. It's, you know, an error. It's just, it's not a plus. And it's really, really starting to get at me, because everybody knows how I felt about Chris Sale. I love Chris Sale. And if you're going to try to get me to love somebody more than Chris Sale, you better perform better than he is. And you're not even a tenth there. So one extra base hit in 15 games or so. Yeah, I'm sorry. Like that's just not cutting it. And he needs to figure it out. I'm also done with it, Chris. I'm sick of hearing the fact that he lost 14 pounds. I don't care. Figure it out. You're a professional ball player. You're expected to play a professional position, whether it be second base or shortstop or whatever they ask you to play, and you're giving us nothing. So, Terry, anything else you want to add for Vaughn?
You guys really hit on most of it. He's at the point now where he's been back, I think, close to a month, at least a few weeks, let's say. So, I mean, things should be trending upwards. He's had enough reps here to hopefully find himself into somewhat of a rhythm. And it seems like he's going backwards. It seems like there's a ton of regression. And when you're talking about the whole weight loss thing, his last several games with AAA Worcester were pretty good. I mean, he ended it on a 4-4 night, four hits and four at-bats. So this is just a matter of him sputtering right now. And it's just one part of why we're not performing, but you look at how we're doing from the right-handed side. I mean, O'Neill kind of showed back up, in the St. Louis series after having a real dud of the last three or four series. So you got some inconsistent right-handed production there. Wong, obviously, pretty good. But you need a guy like Grissom to be in that conversation, and he's not giving you that. The defense hasn't been terrible with him, which is what the primary concern was. I do feel like he doesn't get to ground balls. Like, I don't know what it is. I don't know how to articulate it, but I just feel like guys like Pedroia all those years, even Christian Arroyo in recent years, could just dive that extra foot or two to snag it, or at least knock it down. And it just seems like Grissom's just not getting to them a little bit. So ultimately, I mean, I'd rather see him. The bigger problem is at the plate, but we'll see. I'm rooting for the guy. I'm still fairly optimistic he will figure it out. But, man, are we cursed at second base or what?
It's been bad for years. It's been so bad, like since Petey, there hasn't been anybody like that. And we're lucky to have had him for as long as we did. Granted, the ending wasn't the storybook ending that we all hoped for, but it's a revolving door of just bad news bears. It's been brutal. My dud for this series was Brian Baio, someone who I was always in the corner of, but now I have lost faith. I've lost trust. Three home runs allowed in 4 2/3 innings. I mean, first inning, you've thrown less than 10 pitches and already it's 2-0 St. Louis. I'm like, this game's already getting out of hand. And if we had the offense, I'd say, all right, we can get back into this game, but we don't right now. And this isn't Pittsburgh. This is a team that's, I think, worse than Pittsburgh. So I thought, all right, this should be a lock for us. We should definitely get this win. It was his worst performance. He gave up three dingers, which is more home runs than, I mean, it's actually one home run less than all of April. So when I'm looking at consistency and someone who's trying to get back on track after kind of a rough Washington outing, when you struck out one guy, you walked a pair in five innings of work, wasn't really expecting this, where you're allowing five in less than five innings and you strike out four, but you give up three long balls. So yeah, we were able to tie the game back up to two, but then he gives up a Gorman homer and now we're down 3-2 again. And after that, the wheels just fell off. The Red Sox offense is not there. There are way too many inconsistencies. There are way too many black holes. There are way too many, we don't know if, this is going to work out. And we're still tinkering. And at the beginning of the year, everyone was saying, oh, this is a team, we're starting to get loaded and things are going great. But Tyler Neal was going off. Devers was going off. Costas was going off. Well, Costas is not here anymore. O'Neill was injured for what felt like way too long, and he's still not right since then. And Devers just got back and is on fire. But still, we were depending on three guys, and now we're getting 1.25, 1.5. And we have a kind of okay rotation, not great by any stretch of the imagination, but five earned runs, you're not giving your team an opportunity to win that game. Like, I expect from your ace or someone who wants to be the ace, six innings minimum, two or three earned runs minimum, five or six strikeouts minimum, at least one per inning. And this just wasn't it. I mean, they just absolutely teed off. And I mean, it wasn't balls that were just barely going over the fence. Like some of these hits, I mean, even foul balls in the past couple of games, some of the balls that, you know, opponents are hitting off of us, they're looking like they're going to be home runs if they were just a little bit more fair. So we're also getting a little bit lucky too. Like some of these games could be far worse than they were. We were only outscored by one run in this entire series, but it could have been so much worse if we didn't score 11 in the third game. So Bayo for me, dud. Chris.
Yeah, I think Bayo's a good pick. I've been sour on Bayo for a bit now, even stemming back to last season. I'm kind of getting sick of hearing about how, like, waiting, like, Bayo's going to be the ace. Like, I'm already off that chip, to be honest, until he shows me something different. Because Bayo has a propensity that when he gives up hits, they tend to be long balls, right? Like, at this point, he might have a future at NASA with the amount of things that leave the ballpark. Because he only pitched 4 2 innings, 7 hits, almost half of them were home runs. And this isn't the first time. This is a cyclical thing with Bayo, where when he gives up home runs, they come in bunches. And to your point, they're always early in the game where it feels like the game's out of reach at that point. You know, the difference between his performance and, like, take Pivetta's today, right? Pivetta, they're talking about no hitter. As soon as they start mentioning that, boom, home run. He settled down, though, and then he was like, nope, that's it. And you're not getting anything else. And in fact, I don't even think he gave up another hit after that. So I'm concerned because I think we've put a lot of equity as a team and an organization into putting a lot of trust into Bayo being that ace, and he's not. And as much as we talk about the big three, there's no one coming up the pipe with them that's going to be a pitcher to be the ace. So if Bayo's not, where's it coming from? What do you think, Terry?
Well, it was his 25th birthday, and he got spanked with a few home runs. And he's the one guy in the Red Sox rotation that's just impervious to the Andrew Bailey magic. Like, I don't know. It just doesn't take with him so far. It seemed like the changeup was a big problem for him. Wasn't locating it the way that he needed to, and got off to a bad start. I mean, first two batters of the game, double, and then a home run. So it's, I don't think even Newt Barr has hit a ton of home runs. I meant to look that up, but
I'd have to look too.
Yeah, I think
two of those. Yeah, to your point, two of those home run balls, I'm pretty sure were changeups. I don't think the third one was either a sinker or a fastball, but the first one was 100%. I'm 100% that was a changeup. That thing just laid up there because he's got sinkers that can, he has some good stuff. The problem is I don't think we're locating it right. And everything was in the middle of the plate or middle in. And if you give middle in and they hit that like a little early, that thing's going over the fence in St. Louis if it's nice and warm. I don't know what the game time temperature was. I didn't pay attention to that. But when you hit a ball over 430 feet, you didn't miss it. You nailed it.
Yeah, so Newport's got 5 home runs on the season. 2 of them came in the last 2 days. So
okay, I thought it was probably less than that, but he's pitching like Dave Bush is still the pitching coach. Like there's just been no change. You're still kind of waiting for him to get over that hump, you know, with consistency. And I never, you know, people like to compare him to Pedro because he hangs out with Pedro. He's from the same country as Pedro. And, you know, that's always the hope that you're going to develop one of the next generational talents. And we've done that, you know, in the batter's box, but we haven't really done it from the pitcher's mound. And what's the ceiling for him? Because to me, he's got Marcus Stroman written all over him as what his ceiling is going to be, which is a strong number 3, maybe on a really good year, a number 2. But he's not the guy you're going to build around. You're going to have to develop that person or you're going to have to sign that person in the next year or two.
Yeah, so I think that Bayo has a higher ceiling than Stroman. He definitely has better character. if you ask Brian Baio to pitch on opening day, I don't think he's going to give you the middle finger and say, nah, bro, I'm good. So Baio is a core pitcher that you could build around, but I don't think he's a sole guy that you could build around. He's not Chris Sale. He's not Pedro Martinez. He's still a kid. Brian Baio was brought into Boston's rotation as necessity, not because of, oh, let's try it out because he's ready. We brought him up because we had no other options, and he was not ready and absolutely got shellacked. And to quote Cody, had his lunch packed for him. Cody, shout out to you, good sir. It wasn't pretty, and there have been a lot of games like that. There have been a lot more games where we've had the lunch packed as opposed to like the one-hit game where, you know what you saw against Pittsburgh, and that was phenomenal. I mean, that's great, but the problem is that's like an anomaly when you give up three dingers and you're not – it's just not there. So are we ever going to see that like 10, 12 strikeout back-to-back performance? I don't know. Pittsburgh's got a dude who's thrown 101, struck out the first seven guys. Paul Skeens, if you guys haven't looked him up, look him up now. Guy's going to be an absolute star. He's an absolute freak. And he's blowing pitches by at 101, 102 miles an hour. Baio's not that guy. Baio's getting around with, you know, a sinker change fastball combo. And, you know, would it hurt to have him like work on a cutter? Because Ryan Brazier learned a cutter and moved to Los Angeles and has like a, you know, 0.04 ERA, it felt like, you know, microscopic. And if you were to incorporate something like that, you know, you have one tailing away and one tailing in, that could be pretty devastating. You're not sure which pitch you're going to get, you know? So I wish I had something more positive to say about Brian Baio, but you're right, Tara. I mean, this is not the he would need to take not one step up. He would need to take two or three steps up in order to say, yes, you're the type of guy that we can build around. You and Tanner Houck and Cutter Crawford and insert a fourth name here. Because right now you have a bunch of threes. You don't have a two lock, and you sure as heck don't have a one. No disrespect. It's not there. Numbers don't lie. If you put any of those guys up against any ace, are you going to pick them? No. You're going to put them against, you know, Dan Wheeler, Zach Wheeler, excuse me, Aaron Nola, or Paul Skeens. Paul Skeens has pitched twice in his career. I wouldn't pick them to win against Paul Skeens because Paul's just killing – he's just destroying everything. And he's only had two games, small sample size. But I live based on facts here, and facts are telling me that things aren't looking so great. Yeah, Chris.
Yeah, Bob, Paul Skeens is an absolute monster. I mean, I think he struck out like the first six or seven batters with all like 100 mile an hour fastballs the other day. Yeah, this seven. That's was amazing. But a point that you made, Terry, as far as Baio being impervious to the Andrew Bailey magic at this point, I think Andrew Bailey also has to kind of look as what is becoming contagious from Brian Baio is home runs, because it's not just Baio giving up home runs. All the pitchers are starting to give up home runs, and it showed up in this series. And it'll be interesting to see how Andrew Bailey reacts and gets his pitching staff to maybe put a little bit of a focus on that, because that could become a huge issue for this rotation right now if, quote-unquote, Brian Baio is supposed to be the ace. So,
I mean, to me, it's Tanner Houck is the ace. And he hasn't even been, like, filthy in the last handful of starts. He's been effective. I'm not poo-pooing him. But, I mean, he hasn't gone out there and posted 8 to 10 strikeouts. He's kind of grinding throughout the starts, but still, you know, not allowing the, you know, the runners to come all the way home. So, but to me, it's Tanner Houck. If we're a playoff team and you have the luxury of picking your game one starter in that first series, I'm rolling out Houck. And
let me ask you guys a question. And I apologize for interrupting you, but you just talked about Tanner Houck, and I agree with you about where you'd put him in your rotation in line. You go Houck one. I imagine you probably go Cutter two, yeah. Baio three. All right, cool.
Pavetta three.
Okay, cool. Five game set against the Yankees, against the Twins, against the Mariners. Do you win? Do you lose the series? And then what's the final tally in a five game set?
Just based on pitching.
If you guys are facing ALDS five-game set, do you win the series? Do you lose the series against the Twins, the Mariners, the Yankees, the Orioles? Do you win against any of those teams?
No, but more no. Because of the offense. I mean, you made a good point, Charlie.
It's not just the offense, my friend. If you're giving up loading up five runs and you've given up two runs in the first six, seven pitches of the game, you haven't even given your team a chance to get the lead ahead. So you're lucky to win one of those five.
Well, that's what I was about to touch on from an earlier point. You said in your initial Bayo take, well, we don't have the offense to make that back up and to get back in the game, and we don't. And just imagine how bad we're going to be once the book is more out on some of these guys. I mean, I just pointed out that Hauk hasn't been that filthy lately, and I think teams have learned to be a little bit more patient with him. Let's take some pitches. Let's see if he's actually going to locate these. And so I'm just saying that the next 4 months.
we talked now, Terry, you and I have had multiple conversations off book, on book, on the air, off the air. And we're talking about like the Red Sox when it comes to, I think it's the month of June or July, and it's going to be one of those shield your eyes from this one, children. Because when we get to the month of June, you're going to be seeing Atlanta, Philly, New York. Toronto could be interesting, but it gets really exciting in July because then you get New York. Kansas City, I think, is going to be an absolute like bleep show. And then you come back and you have this. This is your series through Houston, which originally we thought, oh, crap, Houston's going to be crazy. L.A. for three, Colorado for three, whatever. New York for three, ouch. Seattle for three, ouch. The Rangers for three, Royals for three, Houston Astros. I mean, it gets bad. Houston, Texas, Baltimore, Houston. I mean, we don't get a break in July. There's a very good chance we could be 15 to 20 games under by the end of July. It could be that bad. So and to your point, Terry, once people do have the books on some of these guys, it would surprise me if you see three or four runs every other appearance, because they're not aces. It's not going to be an expectation in reality that they're going to be going out and giving you six plus innings and they're going to be allowing less than four runs. The problem about that, or with that, excuse me, is that your team sometimes can't score four runs. So you're already down before the fifth or sixth inning is over. And in some cases, the second or third inning, and it just started getting packed on. I mean, game one was an absolute disaster. And I'm going to talk about that with dishonorable mentions in a second. If there's anything else you guys want to add, Terry, go ahead.
Total random nugget. The Houston Astros have won 8 of their last 10. So I was still of the opinion they'll figure it out. They'll figure it out, and I think they're getting there. Their pitching all around hasn't been great. Their offense actually ranks pretty well in MLB. I think they got a top 5 or so offense. Charlie's favorite, Altuve, has had a great year, but. But Verlander's back, and they should be getting some arms back, and they will make a move if they have to in July. They've done it before, so we'll see. And it's just going to be another tough team that we still have to face twice. And the month of September, almost entirely AL East, and I think we only have one or two wins so far against the AL East.
Yeah, the Houston Astros have Kyle Tucker, and he is the new Matt Olson. He's probably going to hit 40 to 50 home runs. Ran into two today. I think he's up to 15 now. So he's leading all of Major League Baseball, and he's an absolute stud. He's making up for the fact that Yordan Alvarez is not really doing his job. Alex Bregman's kind of falling apart. Jose Altuve, whatever. He's hitting over 300, but he's got 8 bombs. So the team isn't missing, and if you put it all together, yeah, your offense can do great, but their pitching hasn't been great, and we've had multiple pieces falling apart. So to our dishonorable mentions, I actually put Rob Refsnyder in there too. Even though he went 3 for 8 and had some good hits, half of his at-bats were strikeouts. So you struck out 4 times in 8 at-bats. Was not pretty. Also, quite possibly the most embarrassing error I have seen from him since – I want to say almost Jaron Duran in center field when he lost the ball and inside the park grand slam at Fenway Park and a new record of runs scored against. It was like 27 or 28 runs by the Raimel Tapia, the grand slam. And it was 28 to whatever. It didn't matter. We got absolutely smoked. Slayton also got his lunch packed for him, allowed 4 earned in an inning. Cam Boozer in that first game did great in the second one, struck out 2, but the first one, 2 earned runs, gave up a dinger, inning in a third. Chase Anderson also lunch packed 3 walks, 3 earned runs in 2 innings of work. I mean, that was just an absolute cluster, you know what. I mean, everybody that pitched in that game, it went from bad to worse. And Slayton, too, in game 2, it was ugly. And, you know, we need to do better. And if all the stars are aligned against us and all of our, you know, relievers are giving up 1 or 2 earned runs and a home run here or there, yeah, we're going to lose 3 out of 4, 2 out of 3. We could get swept. And so, you know, Jeremy, God bless him, he's been picking the Red Sox to sweep. I think 2 sweeps in a row, he's picked the Red Sox to win. He went 4 in a row and I believe 3 in a row for this one. I'd have to check my stat sheet on that one. And sadly, he's been the most positive one out of all of us. And I remember working with him, you know, 4 years ago, and he was blatantly honest, just like you and I, but he's been such an optimist. And I really want the Red Sox to do even better just for him, because he's actually the only person that's putting all eggs in their basket. But right now I can't, like, I just cannot do it. And so, I mean, I don't know if there's any other dishonorable mentions that you guys wanted to talk about, but for me, this was, I mean, it was brutal, brutal.
Did you mention Chase Anderson?
Oh yeah, Chase Anderson, 3 earned, 3 walks in 2 innings. Yeah,
that's so, a guy who's not long for this roster. If
no, he's gone soon.
I mean, 100%. If you show up for mop up duty and you end up being the mop, it's like, what are you good for, man?
Nothing. Toodles.
Yeah.
Bye. Bye-bye.
I think they really want Winkowski to stay in a starter type role, and I think he should, because you're still hoping for the best with Criswell. He finally did have a rough outing, but so you don't really have Winkowski that can come back in that bulk role. Garrett Whitlock, let's talk about him for a second. Elbow issues. I don't know what the status is as far as imaging, or there's no timetable from what I can tell. And he wasn't even out with elbow issues. He was rehabbing an oblique, had one really good outing with the Worcester Woo Sox, and now he's got a separate injury with his elbow. And he had an injury last year, some type of nerve thing. I forget what the clinical term for it was. He missed, like, I think 5 or 6 weeks with it. Came back mostly as a reliever, I think, for the rest of the season. But, man, that's another arm. I don't think you can count on him for the rest of the year anyway, at least as a starter.
It's terrible. It's absolutely devastating to see that happen. And I didn't want to bring it out for this one just because morale was low and it's getting lower. But this is the result of when you tinker, tinker, tinker. And when you try to break something that isn't broken, you will mess it up. Possibly Daniel Bard 2.0. It would not shock me, and it would disappoint me if this ended up being the same thing where he comes back and he's just not the same. And he's out of the league for a couple of years and then finds himself in Cincinnati and becomes like an elite closer because we couldn't do our damn job and just pay attention and read the room. Just read the room. He's not a starter. Every time he starts, he breaks. It's nothing against him. I don't dislike Garrett Whitlock. I do like Garrett Whitlock, not as a starter. Just, it's so dumb. I could go down this rabbit hole, and I just don't want to do that because we got to talk about the highlights of this series, and there were a couple. So with that, Terry, why don't you lead us off with our studs?
My stud for the series is going to be Nick Pivetta, who essentially didn't allow a base runner aside from a solo home run. And for some reason, he's prone to those solo home runs. It seems like the opposing lineup can just pick something. If they're an off-speed hitter, they can wait for something to sit on. If they're a fastball hitter, and, you know, someone just kind of runs into one. But that was the only hit he gave up over 6 innings. That happened. Who was that that hit that? Let's see. I just had it. Newt Barr got his fifth, right? So that was in the fourth inning, but first inning, three up, three down. Second inning, three up, three down. Third inning, fifth inning, sixth inning, three up, three down. It was a dominant performance from him. And what made it so great was, I mean, this is a team we should have put at least two wins up against. And I really thought, again, we were going to put all three up. But you're down 0-2 in the series, and you desperately need a win before you head off to Tampa. And Pivetta was just lights out right now. And, I mean, that was the best. Well, Crawford has put up some pretty good performances. Pivetta was the best of the series. But, I mean, when was the last time we've seen one like that dominant? It's been a little while since someone really... You know, it was only six innings, so I can't call it a gem, but one hit, no walks, nobody got on base outside of Newt Barr. So good performance. Nick Pivetta is not going to be on this team in August. And if you're listening to us right now and you haven't had that conversation with yourself, start having it. It's his walk year. He's one of the few guys on this roster that you can acquire a really good prospect for, or perhaps someone that's even on a major league roster right now that's got a year or two left. So the one guy who was electric from start to finish.
Chris, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've been asking that question myself, Terry, as far as him being on the team. And if we got Grissom for sale, it'll be interesting to see what we can get for Pivetta, although I know his health is not as much of a concern.
Maybe we'll put Grissom in the trade package.
Yeah, that would be nice. There's really – you hit a lot of good points. I mean, the six innings, yeah, it wasn't a gem, but, I mean, the fact that he only had 72 pitches at that point, I think it was more of us being conservative because him just coming back from injury. I think he definitely, if it was a situation where we needed him to, he could have gone more, no doubt. I mean, he had eight strikeouts, and there was probably another three that the ump today was like very like off. And like he painted the corner, top inside corner a couple times to some left-handed batters, and he did not get that call. He probably could have had about 11 strikeouts today, but he didn't have given up a hit. 71%. Strikes thrown. So, I mean, it was fantastic. And the fact that we got the mix of the offense, I think was good for him. It helped him settle down and not get himself into trouble after that home run. But yeah, it was just impressive stuff. It's going to be sad if he's not on the team, to be honest.
Terry's brought this up multiple times, and it stinks to think about the fact that one of your only, you know, lights is potentially not going to be on this team. And if you sell Nick Pivetta, I get it. But here's the thing, and you're just – you have to understand that sometimes the trades you make don't work out. And when you trade for picks or players or young stars that are still not proven, you're not guaranteed to necessarily hit lightning in a bottle, as we just witnessed with Vaughn Grissom for Chris Sale. Vaughn Grissom was supposed to answer our questions at second base. In the event, Trevor Story wasn't going to play second because he's going to be Arbor Day shortstop. Well, Trevor Story's not here, and Vaughn Grissom doesn't feel like he's here either. So when you potentially do let go of Nick Pivetta, and if that happens, I'll be pretty peeved, what is the return that you're going to be expecting? Because what Nick Pivetta are you going to get? Are you going to get the Pivetta that came out lights out after being relegated to the relievers role and just came out and set almost a new high in strikeouts? He missed it by 4 or 5. He tied his win total with 10. He's capable of getting 15 if you put an offense behind him. Last year he had an ERA over 4, but was highly amped up because of some bad starts at the beginning of the year. Right now he's sitting at 3.04, so an entire run below where he was at last year. Home run ball, not a concern. you guys already talked about the fact that some pitches didn't go his way. You guys really want to have a good time, just look at the calls that have gone against Mookie Betts. I'm not a fan of Mookie Betts, but that guy's been getting hosed more than anybody else in Major League Baseball. You want to find another fun at bat. Juan Soto actually struck out looking without actually seeing a strike. So umpires have been an all new level of bad this year. But here's the thing. Had his best start of the season, no question. I mean, opening day season start for him was against Seattle, and he struck out 10 in six innings. So if that was any sign of what's to come, assuming all things go great, yeah, you're going to have a guy that lights it up. And if he does get traded, you better get some top tier, you know, your number two, your number three pick or prospect, because if not, I don't want to trade Nick Pivetta right now. I can't do it. Yeah, Terry, go ahead.
Couple things here. Number one, whatever team that acquires him, I'm sure they're going to be looking at a couple of things, thinking, okay, we're gonna help him do this, and he's just going to be that much better, you know, after a couple of starts. That's number one. Number two, this isn't quite an apples to oranges type thing, but look what the Yankees did in 2016 with Aroldis Chapman. They traded him to the Cubs, got Gleyber Torres back. I want to say Clint. No, I don't think Frazier did come. I think he was in the Miller deal. But they got a couple of prospects back. They obviously hit on Gleyber Torres from the Cubs. And then that next winter, they signed him back. So they got this massive trade package and then signed him anyway. So the Red Sox can do that if they want to. Now, here's the bad news. They don't want multi-year deals. They don't want 3 or 4 year deals. There's no precedent of that post Dombrowski. So even if we don't trade Nick Pivetta, I'm extremely pessimistic that we're actually going to pay the guy.
Yeah, I was going to say that costs time and money, what you're talking about, which it doesn't seem like the Sox want to invest either of those things right now. So what were you going to say, Charlie? I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, totally cool. I just to reinforce what you just said, you know, Terry, you kind of hit the nail on the head there. We're not giving 3-4 year deals. It's just not really the MO of the Boston Red Sox. You just don't like to do it. We used to do it. We just don't do it anymore, unless you're Rafi Devers. So unless there's anything. Oh, yeah, Terry, go ahead.
Yeah, just as we wrap up the Pivetta part, here's five teams. I just went through the standings. Five possible destinations that could use a guy like Pivetta. They're not in any particular order, but the first one I'll rattle off is the Texas Rangers. I think their rotation is a little bit wonky. They didn't bring back Montgomery. Scherzer, who the hell knows? I think he might have had a setback. So Rangers could be looking for an upgrade. The Braves could come calling. They're holding their own right now, but let's face it, you know, they could use somebody in place of Spencer Strider, at least someone that can, you know, give them a good chance to win each time out. I put the Cubs in there. I don't know that they're desperately going to be seeking a starter, but it wouldn't hurt. I put the Padres in there because they're extremely erratic, you know, and Preller I'm pretty sure that's a bottom 3 or 4 farm at this point. He's just blown it up. And the last team that could come calling is the San Francisco Giants. A little bit extra security in their rotation. If you guys look through, I mean, perhaps you might find another team or two in there. Some of them, I mean, I don't think the Mets are going to be contenders. The Nationals are interesting. If they were to climb into it, perhaps they could be, but I don't think the Padres, the Cardinals will be in it. The Reds are falling further by the week, so we'll see.
Yep. Moving right into our second stud. Chris, who'd you have?
I have Connor Wong. Connor Wong was 6-for-13 in the series. Had an RBI, a run. But honestly, the fact he had also two people thrown out at second base in game two. And I think he may have also had one in game one as well. He's been electric for us the last couple of weeks as far as with his bat. His defense is always reliable at this point. And let's face it, he's the only thing left from the Mookie Betts trade that's worth anything. I thought it was a good series for him. It's not really much more to say because, to be honest, we lost two games, so this was kind of hard to find people that were studs in this series. Duds was a lot easier for me.
Absolutely. Terry, anything you want to add?
Wasn't there a play where I think it was a pass ball, but it had almost a perfect carom off of the, you know, the brick barrier, and then he was able to gun down the runner trying to take third. I thought that was
correct. Yeah, that was in game two.
Game two, okay. Yeah,
that was the second throwout. That's right. That was at third, correct.
Yeah.
And then the inning before that, he threw someone out at second. And then I could have sworn in game one he also had someone thrown out at second base, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, I mean, he's slowly become the guy that I think he's exceeding expectations at this point anyway. I mean, most people expected he would be a serviceable catcher behind the plate, but man, the dude has wheels. How many catchers can run like him? You know, he runs like a center fielder, you know.
Well, he doesn't have the frame of a catcher. I mean,
true.
To be honest, he's
very wiry.
I'll give you one even better. We were talking about Nick Pivetta, right? Like the fact that he's not going to be on this team in August, most likely. What are we doing with Wong long-term with Kyle Teal?
We had a lengthy debate about that. I think it was on the midweek show. And I took the position to where I'm open-minded. If we give him if we say, you know what, he is going to be our guy because we don't have a ton of righty power bats and we want to stay balanced. If they lock him up to a team friendly extension, I'm good with that. If you want to go full bore and just put all your eggs in the Kyle Teal basket, I'm good with that too, but you better get a haul. You better get a haul for Connor Wong. There's no other catcher that's going to be available on the trade market that's going to impact, you know, their team offensively and defensively like Connor Wong does. So if you're getting a couple of nice prospects or a really good, you know, current major league guy, I'm good with it as long as it's a good return.
I think the counter to that that you're going to hear is that Connor Wong is 28 years old and he hits ARB1 next year. And yeah, you will get him probably peak post 1 year out of peak. I think that's going to be the one thing that other teams are going to say, well, there's that. If he was 24 or 25 and this is happening, yeah, you're getting a king's ransom. But I don't see that happening for the Red Sox in this particular situation. But Connor Wong could do no wrong. Went 6-for-13, got on base, had 5 singles, only struck out one time, which is, you know, mirror imaging another player that also did the exact same thing. I'm going to talk about him in a little bit. But he's doing his job, you know, like, no, we're not seeing home run bomb city coming out of him, but you know, we don't necessarily need to. So as long as you can get on base and you try to set the table for your team, I mean, I'm not going to complain about it. And, you know, to your point, there are very few catchers in Major League Baseball that are doing anything remotely close to what he's doing. So it's just a matter of that level of consistency. Can he keep that up for the remainder of the year? Yeah, T.
I still think even at 28, I mean, Christian Vasquez got a team-friendly extension. They bought up the last few years of arbitration, added a year or two, and I'm pretty sure that was his walk year when we shipped him to Houston. But also the thing about Connor Wong is he's such a commodity as a catcher. I mean, how can you get that production from the catcher spot? It's not like you're an outfielder where it's going to be a fairly broad market every July and every winter. I mean, that's what he's doing in that position. I think a team would give up a decent trade package.
Well, I'll split the difference because I agree with both your perspectives. I see what you're saying, Charlie, as far as the age and the likelihood of being able to field a package like that just at any given moment. But to your point, Terry, and I think when you talk about the Vasquez trade, it's very circumstantial, right? Like Houston at that time, like let's face it, Maldonado was giving him nothing behind the plate as far as with a bat, and they were trying to chase the championship. I think if you catch a team that's in a very similar circumstance where they're ready to win now and they're trying to go for the World Series, and they either have a catcher that's hurt or just isn't swinging the bat well, and that's going to help, you know, bolster their offense at that point, then yeah, I think, let's face it, we got Abreu in that trade, right? So maybe we can field something, but I think it is going to be a circumstantial if we do.
And I think it's less likely. I mean, there will be, Breslow will be fielding calls on it for teams at least trying to take his temperature. And for it to happen this year, I think it's going to have to be a package that blows the Red Sox away. And like I said, if that happens, I'm good with it. I'm okay with Kyle Teal. On the other hand, like I said, how many of these catchers ever really live up to it? You know, how many years is it going to take Kyle Teal to get to where Connor Wong is right now? That there's so many question marks with that position. And Teal, for what it's worth, is a Boris guy. So I don't know what the strategy is. Maybe Boris would take a pre-arb deal. We haven't really crossed that bridge with a Boris client for quite some time, but we'll see.
That is going to do it for the second stud. For the third one, I know I'm going to shock everyone by not taking my guy. Rafi Devers, you just can't not mention him. The guy went 3-for-12, and every single time he hit the ball, it was over the fence. So 3-for-12 in the series, 3 homers, 5 ribbies, scored 4 runs, 2 strikeouts, walked. Not really much to add other than the fact that he's 1 game and 1 home run away from, if I'm not mistaken, setting the record for most games in a row as a member of the Boston Red Sox. He's had a home run in 5 straight. So if he does it again in the next game, he will make it 6 straight and set the single season record for 6 games in a row with a ding dong. Chris, anything you want to add to Devers?
No, I think it's a solid pick. It was a good series for him. The fact that, yeah, all 3 of his hits were home runs. It'd be interesting to see him going into Tampa to see if he can set that record and beat the vaunted Bobby Dalbec and stand all alone in Red Sox history. So,
Terry.
I don't think he's going to do it 6 games in a row. We have Taj Bradley. I hope it happens. Don't get me wrong. I'm rooting for it, but it's going to end sometime, and it's going to end in Tampa one way or the other. I mean, because he's going to be getting lefty relievers shoved down his throat for the rest of the game when Bradley comes out. So we'll see, but he is going off, and the climate isn't very good right now with the way the team's trending, but Devers is still stepping up and doing what he can. We're going to get into more of him on the next episode a little bit, so I guess I'll just save it for that. That's totally legit, or calling the cops, and that'll drop Tuesday morning.
Perfect. I'm glad you don't foreshadow too much, Terrence. A couple honorable mentions in this one. Duran also did really well, in my opinion, 3-for-12. Actually got a stolen base. He's up to 10 now, folks. No, he's not leading the league. You got some guys in the National League that are already, I think Ellie De La Cruz is at like 25 or something. It's insane. Someone will have to double check to make sure I'm not crazy, but I think he's at 25. He had like 4 stolen bases a couple games ago, literally out of his mind. But Jaren Duran, back to him for a second. Pair of singles, had a nice triple, couple of walks as well. Really, really doing nice. Chris Martin struck out the side in his 1 inning of work, so I felt that it was really important to talk about him. Ellie De La Cruz, by the way, has 30 stolen bases.
I was just about to say.
He is on pace for over 100. He stole 4 against the Dodgers on last Thursday. He went 4-for-4 in that game, but since then, very quiet. 0-for-8 with 4 strikeouts. Don't know how he did today, but it's just absolutely insane. And I have one more honorable mention. Terry, buckle up, sit down, put your seatbelt on, and that is Tyler O'Neill, who went 1-for-5 in the first game with no strikeouts, single, scored a run. Second game went 1-for-4 with a single, only 1 strikeout. These are really, really good numbers for those that haven't listened to us in the last 2 weeks. And then Tyler O'Neill does what I call the Terry hit, the big dinger, 439 feet of beauty. As soon as it left the bat, I knew it. I think everybody on the planet knew it too. 2 for 3, 3 runs scored, 2 walks, no strikeouts. So we saw him go 4 for 12 with, I think, 3 or 4 walks and 1 strikeout. He used to be a lock for 6 or 7, Terry. Remember those days? Only a series or two ago? I know you don't love it, but I'm relishing the fact that this guy's got 11 home runs, is leading the team. We still have a couple games to go in May, and who knows, maybe a 3-homer game in Tampa Bay. Who knows? Terry, I know you want to talk about this, so why don't you go first, and then Chris, you ain't after.
I'll let you keep your glory.
What a gentleman. All right, Chris, anything you want to add?
No, I think it was – you hit all the points. It was just nice to not see a 4-strikeout game. It was the Tyler O'Neill revenge tour today in St. Louis.
You know, one thing that I thought was really cool, for those that had the opportunity to watch the games, he had a really nice standing ovation, you know, kind of stepped out, umpire got out of the way, catcher kind of took a couple steps up, and they stopped the pitch clock, and they did it, you know, when you spent a couple of years with a team. Tyler O'Neill, for those that don't know, spent the first 6 years of his career from 2018 through 2023, had a really, really good 2021 campaign, slugging 34 home runs, hitting .286. Strikeout numbers weren't that great then. And then, unfortunately, the numbers started kind of dwindling down and not going well. Last year, kind of hit a point where it just wasn't working out, hitting .230 with 9 home runs. And so far, in less than half the games, he's got 11 on the season. So, I mean, I think a change of scenery really does help. The same thing applies for players on the Boston Red Sox. Sometimes a change of scenery helps. Ryan Brazier goes to LA, finds Jesus, becomes an elite eighth inning guy. Chris Sale leaves Boston. Absolutely insane, lights out. Like, I don't want to face Chris Sale ever again, because if he does that, like, it's great. We're going to give you 2 minutes. We'll give you standing ovation, but now you're the enemy and we have to figure out how to hit you. So really happy that O'Neill was able to kind of right the ship for the series. And to your point, Chris, a little bit of a revenge tour. You know, I think he really wanted to not, you know, set the screws in on that series, but it was nice to see him have a good, good game. 2 for 3 with 3 runs scored and a homer. I'll take that in a series, whether it be 3 or 4 games. You don't have to go crazy all 3 games. But for Tyler O'Neill, this is really good, considering his last 3 or 4 series, to Terry's point, have been really bad. We've seen sombrero after sombrero after sombrero, a golden sombrero mixed in there too. And it wasn't really great. I'm hoping that he can build on this and go in the right direction and kind of go where he was before he clocked heads and had a really bad concussion. Anything else that you gents wanted to add? All right. Well, that is going to do it for all of us here on the Bastards. Everybody have a great day or great evening. Take care.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week.
Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.